You can't eliminate all problems because then life would be too easy.
Chuffield. Oh my god.
That's so dark.
That's a touch, I feel.
Hello humans, welcome back to Audio Face, week 3. We've made it this far. I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
That was an introduction. And wow, what a week of like music news and things to talk about.
And releases and everything.
Yeah, we've kind of been inundated with a lot of stuff. We have a lot of news, a jam-packed news section for you. But yeah, this is Audio Face on Syndicate 23. We're going to be talking about music news, music culture, all that stuff. And so let's just jump in right in the goods. The Adult Swim Singles Project has been a great... It has really...
It's been interesting, to say the least.
It's been a great, fresh way to, like, bring music into culture. Because Adult Swim has always been, like... That's been a great aspect of, like, Turner and Cartoon Network's brand, is that they have this Adult Swim thing, which can directly tap into, like, hip millennial culture. And they're, like, kind of the first ones to do it. Now you have, like, the Super Deluxes of the world and all of those people. But, like... No, so the Adult Swim Singles Project is expanding to 52 weeks. It's up till now run only in the summer.
Right.
And
so now it's going to be all year.
It's yeah.
Cool.
So the other new thing is that it's going to be streamed now. They're no longer doing downloads for a while, or like ever since it started. Adult Swim was just doing downloads only of their tracks.
Right.
Then they started doing downloading and streaming. But no, they kind of made a point that people don't do music anymore, according to Adult Swim's creative director. So... yet another interesting conversation in our long-going talk about how music, the way you're consuming music is changing, and there's a rush to figure out what the economic incentives and economic structures are for that.
Yeah, right. What the best ways of action for the artists are as well.
Yeah.
So this is one way to tackle it.
Yeah. Well, that's a long conversation, but let's just get into the goods.
Right.
Who's going to be on this list for a year, which is kind of interesting, because does that mean... Adult Swim Singles Project just gonna always be there? When do they stop? When do they take a break? If it's 365 days, does the next one start next?
Anyways, next year, the year after?
Run the Jewels, Brian Eno, Julian Casablancas and the Voids, Doom, and J Electronica. Oh my god, Doom's still making music.
Doom's alive!
I think one of the last like major Doom songs is actually Paper Mill, our favorite song of all time, Paper Mill by MF Doom, also released on Adult Swim Singles Project.
He did a bunch with Adult
Morgan.
Swim.
Morgan!
Oh, God.
Dinosaur Jr., Colin Stetson, Thundercat, Flying Lotus, Mygo, Shabazz Palaces, Explosions in the Sky, Knowledge, spelled with an X, because we're that woke, Zola Jesus, Sad 13, Syndicate 23, no, Tanya Tagak, Sophie, Odyssey, Waves, Washed Out, Julia Holter, Cold, Code Orange, wow, that's just a lot
Flying
of...
Flying Lotus, that's gonna... I love his stuff. It's interesting.
No, yeah, very interesting alternative stuff. Waves also there, I think I mentioned that already. But no, this is a very, like, packed list, and you're gonna get a new song from Adult Swim every single day. That's just kind of dope.
That's awesome. I love that.
It's almost as if you're getting infinite content.
Yep.
Which is also the new Arcade Fire. That was the smoothest segue of all time.
It's extremely smooth.
You wish your boyfriend could give you a segue that smooth.
I mean, hit me up, MeUndies. I mean, come on. We get that sponsorship real quick, you know? Get your boy with that Squarespace.
Not only was that the best advertisement, the best segue ever. That was the best advertisement for Squarespace and MeUndies, even though we were receiving no money from them.
Yep.
Arcade Fire, infinite content, everything now. Those are actually all titles.
Yeah, that's literally all titles. So they released a single on Tuesday, I believe. Tuesday or Wednesday?
Thursday.
Thursday. Was it
Thursday? No. Wow, yeah, Thursday. That was Thursday. That was on the Thursday. First.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, never mind. It was the second day I was in the water. Mixed up my days. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything
else. It's been an interesting week.
So...
Cafefe. I'm sorry.
Kill yourself.
Okay. No, but... So we have Arcade Fire. They've announced... Infinite Content, which is their new album that's coming out in July.
July 28th, I believe.
And then the lead single, Everything Now, produced by nothing but...
Thomas from Daft Punk.
Yeah, half of Daft Punk.
Half of Daft Punk, the one in the silver helmet, the tall guy, tall, skinny, weird one.
I usually hate headlines from your EDM, but I believe...
Yeah, me too.
Like all of them, but unfortunately my girlfriend doesn't realize that and always sends them to me. But your EDM's take was that everything Daft Punk touches turns to gold. including exactly what Yuri DM drinks whenever Thomas Punk starts. Anyways.
But this song is really good and extremely catchy. I hate it and love it at the same time. I hate it because it's been stuck on my head for the past 2 days. But it's a really, really good song. Just watched a music video, a very 1984-esque of saying, like, you want everything now.
And no, it's a social statement.
Social
statement,
yeah, they're, exactly.
They're basically, like, I can't explain how much I love the idea of infinite content, because those are two words that kind of describe my mood in 2017. It's just, like, everything is so distracting. Everything is just so much, like...
It's in your face. There's too much noise.
Facebook is literally infinite content. You can keep scrolling forever, and you'll, like, always get there. There's,
Twitter,
like, that
and Instagram.
Much of a drobe. Like,
yeah, the top three are all infinite content.
It's a very, like...
Super consumer.
It's a wonderfully ridiculous. Zeitgeisty kind of way of explaining the times we live in. Everything's very, like, rapid, kind of tense, and...
It's the best way to put it.
I really like how Arcade Fire... Also, you're not even that big of an Arcade Fire fan, and you like the song.
Maybe yeah, I mean, I... Yeah, I am, but not... I don't listen to their stuff regularly, I should say.
Right.
That's a better way to put it. And then... But this came out, and I've been listening to it the past... Just on repeat, because it's such a damn good song.
Yeah.
I really like it. And then just watch a video, go, oh, wow, it's even better.
It is... Yeah, phenomenal song, phenomenally made. Definitely check it out. They're also doing a tour. They announced some dates in Europe. If they play in America, I am going to attend the hell out of that. Oh, wait, no. This does include America.
San Diego.
Yeah, they're playing...
L.A., the Forum.
They're playing in the Forum a week after Gorillaz is playing. I might have to do two trips.
Ooh.
Yikes.
A year of concerts.
Infinite content.
Infinite content.
Right, anyways. More news. Major Lazer released an EP, and... Like, Major... What a brand Major Lazer has become. Like, they are part of, like, the Mad Decent label, and so they do, like, concerts everywhere, like, colleges everywhere. It's, mm-hmm. like, a brand people expect, even when not everyone's there. Like, Major Lazer really, like... I'm talking about, like, artists as brands, because that's a video I'm working on right now, but it was... It's amazing what they've been able to do. And so, musically speaking, you'd kind of expect for it to stagnate in some way. And... My best way of explaining that is saying yes and no. So the EP features 6 tracks, and it's pretty... I mean, like, yeah, I like it. I actually like it a lot. But
naturally.
I also understand... Because I'm a sucker for Major Lazer. I just love the way their work sounds. But I do feel sometimes like they have that unfortunate fact that a lot of, like, electronic artists sound like, where even when they try to make new songs... They can't help just sounding like slight remixes of their old songs.
Right, and that's a big problem. And that's kind of a conversation we had last week of the future of EDM or electronic music, and that's something that a lot of artists have been having, like, problems of.
Like,
it's not necessarily a bad thing either, because you can make something that sounds similar to what it was and make it sound great, i.e. Deadmau5 has his own specific sound.
Yeah.
Kind of almost does it over again, but... changes it, but it's still, like, you can pick it out, sounds like
it.
Major Lazer, same thing,
but
very repetitive.
Jump was, like, the perfect example. So Jump was one of the songs on the album, and on the, like, EP, and I immediately heard it and I was like, this sounds a lot like Mash Up the Dance from maybe 1 or 2 Major Lazer records back. And I was like, it's still a great song. If this were at a festival, I would, like, go so hard to it. But yeah, like, Major Lazer is kind of getting to that point where some of the, like, work is starting to sound just like remixes of the old shit.
Right,
which
right.
is fine. It still sounds great. I still love it. It's just that I want to make sure Major Lazer doesn't just become super brand. Super, not brand. Oh my God, I hate myself. Infinite content. Super bland.
Bland, yeah. Super overly repetitive, you know?
Yeah.
Chainsmokers are repetitive. Don't do that.
Please don't do that. Major Lazer is way too good and, like, way too amazing. And I'm about to, like,
I
give them a lot more credit
for giving them the comparison of Chainsmokers.
No, I'm not offended. This is a warning. Like, because Major Lazer's also just done a lot of, like, collaborations.
I mean,
with
they've
stars.
Done a lot.
Like, they did their Nicki Minaj thing. They did their Justin Bieber thing. Like,
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Did their Showtek song "Believer," which is also great. But, like, I don't want them to just become that, hey, every artist around the block is going to do a track with Major Lazer.
Like,
and they're all
going to be the side hose to every artist.
Yeah, and it's going to be like an easy way for Major Lazer to bring in cash, because just like, hey, we produced this thing.
Cash cow.
You love
yeah.
us. Yeah, like, I don't want Major Lazer to become that. It's too interesting and cool of a project for, and like an experience even, mm-hmm. like a live experience, for me to want that to be consistent.
Yeah, for sure. What else is there?
I'll jump into it. So I actually have country music news.
Take the wheel on the stand, please.
Yeah, so let me explain before you furiously unsubscribe. Wheeler Walker Jr. is a comedian.
First and foremost.
Yes. Benjamin Isaac Hoffman is who he actually is, but Wheeler Walker Jr. is a comedian. He is like he's a character. He's a Stephen Colbert almost. And he has a new album called Old Wheeler with very vulgar, very comedic, very hilarious country music songs. And let me just tell you this. This is my fiery take on this album. This is the last album I was able to hear before we record the podcast. And as I drove on the way here, I was listening to it like on my drive. What an excellent way to make that come out. How do words good? But
how do English words good?
Sorry. As I'm driving, I'm speeding, but I feel like if a cop pulls me over and listens, tells that I'm hearing country music, or like listens to me hearing country music, that's a plus for me. Like, that might be my way into like making this go from a level 3 like Rodney King level beating
to maybe God. Like a speeding ticket. Oh God, okay.
Like, okay. That could be my in. Cause like, if I'm blasting like trap music or something, or like
race, Trap House 3.
Yeah, if I'm dropping drop top wop as I did last time I came here Wop-tober. On the freeway, then that would be a very different police officer. If I'm listening to Wheeler Walker Jr., hopefully he doesn't hear the words. If he does, he realizes it's comedy and kind of charming. He goes, "Hey, you know what? You're one of the good ones." I'm like, "I didn't get out of the situation shot. That's actually great."
Oh God! All right, here we go.
So for the fact that listening to that album gives me a safe space when I'm on the road, I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10. No, seriously. No.
Oh my God. Okay, seriously, Dan.
This album is everything that I find Wheeler Walker Jr. to be, like, funny about. My favorite song of his before was the song Eating Pussy and Kicking Ass from the old album. Redneck Shit. But on Old Wheeler, another couple of great. I'm not going to read all these because I don't want to read all of these, but let's just
Finger
look at some of
up my butt.
That is the name of one song on the album.
All right.
My favorite song on the whole album is If My Dick Is Up, Why Am I Down? Which is a love ballad, really.
I think you just ruined the whole podcast, Dan. How's it, guys? It's been a good three weeks. It's been chill. I'm Sean. I'm out.
Guys. And bye, if guys. You appreciate good comedy and songs that are called Poon.
Poon. P-O-O-N. P.
If you appreciate good, aware comedy, then you will check out Wheeler Walker Jr.'s album, yeah. Old Wheeler, which you shouldn't if you don't like country music at all, because it's very country. But
it's,
you know what?
Fun.
Like, that's... I need to spice things up in my life. Okay, Sean, back to reality.
Back to reality. Back to not unsubscribing from us.
Alt J has an album?
Maybe?
So it's called Relaxer, and it's only 8 songs, which actually, 8 songs is not that bad. I'm used to all these albums with like 20 damn songs.
Like Gucci Mane with like a million songs per album.
8
whatever.
Songs is an album. I was about to call
no, 8
it,
songs it is.
I was about to call sure. it an EP, but it's called Relaxer, and it is very chill is what
it's
I'll put
pretty
it
much the, that's
all I can really say.
It's icing on the cake. I love it. It's chill, it's easy, it's relaxing for once.
It's like driving 30 miles an hour in a Rolls Royce.
Yeah, you're in luxury, you're chilling, you have the seat all the way back so you can barely see the steering wheel. You're like this coming up over the side.
Someone asks, and the only time it's interrupted is maybe with one song, maybe like Hit Me Like That Snare, the fourth song on the album, when someone drives up to your Rolls Royce and asks you if you'd like some Grey Poupon. That's pretty much.
And then the only time you rev it in neutral.
Only
neutral. You don't even put it in a first and go off the line. You just rev it. You put it first, and you keep it. You keep the revs down. You keep it at like 20 miles an hour.
And
seat
you just
back.
Calmly say, "No, sir, but I like your car."
I like your car. Thank
and
you.
And the light turns green, and you both just slowly speed away on the most paved. This is a very relaxing, soft album, and I
think
there's
it.
Art to that.
I love it. Those are my favorite stuff.
Yeah.
So, personally.
I love upbeat things, very like wildly upbeat things, but no, it's called Relaxer. It's very relaxing.
That's the
great
point.
Great job, Alt-J. Yeah. I'm kind of incepted right now. Any last words on that?
No, other than just finally good stuff out.
No, yeah, like if the news of the week ended here, that would be an amazing week.
That'd be a good week, you know?
But it doesn't.
But it doesn't.
We're like halfway through. And so a lot of Radiohead things happened. We're big Radioheads on this show, so...
Hence the name Audio Face.
It's literally just Radiohead, but slightly different. It's just synonymous, basically. If you haven't realized that by now, I love you, and you should really like and subscribe to our show, and also check out the other show on Syndicate 23, We Made It, which has nothing to do with music and has everything to do with soccer, and it's possibly less condescending. But
anyway, so Radiohead.
So there's a lot that happened with Radiohead, so let's start with the video.
Let's start with their song. So OK Computer, they're regarded as their best album, their masterpiece. I personally like other ones, but OK Computer, which is regarded one of the best albums of the 20th century, came out 20 years ago. So they're releasing a remastered version of it later this month. I don't even know how to say Ock Nock Talk, whatever.
With several new songs.
And with three new unreleased B-sides, which they've played in a few shows in the early 90s, or sorry, late 90s, and you can't, the audio quality isn't that great. Some of them are okay, but, so they released the first one of, first old new song, old slash new slash old, however you want to put it, called I Promise. And, they released a video along with it as well, and it's good. It's very OK Computer-y, like you could tell with the synths, Tom on a acoustic guitar, and Tom still having his high voice, which sounds really weird hearing it now because I'm used to the more deep, depressing Tom, which I like and everything, but hearing old, new Tom, I guess, whatever.
Yeah.
It sounds really good, and their music video is really weird and depressing per usual, you know, with the little head of this guy going on trains going around the world or going around the city. Wow, narrow that down. World, country, city.
great work.
Great work. Yeah, so it's kind of, there's a lot of different ways you can emphasize on the song, but I mean, they were going through a lot around that time in the late 90s. But good song. I like it. So looking forward to the next two, which are Manowar, and I can't think of the other one.
Is it going to come out as singles?
No, they're going to just come out, I believe, just along with with Ock Nock Talk, whatever it's called for OK Computer.
Okay. No, I saw the music video. It's kind of amazing how they captured it just looked like an HD version of what Radiohead could have made 20 years ago.
And that's kind honestly, of amazing. Yeah. And that's why I'm looking forward to the remastered version of the album, because my favorite... I have top five Radiohead songs. And one of them that's always... they kind of revolve around or so. One of them that will always be in there is Let Down, which is from OK Computer, obviously. Yeah. I cannot wait for that to be remastered and hear how it sounds more crisp. Because I Promise sounds, you know, like... it was made this year, basically, but obviously it wasn't, because Tom can't sing that high anymore. He's almost 50, so, I mean, you only have your voice for so long. Speaking of Sir Thomas York,
Tom York made some more controversy again.
Naturally, because that's what he does, you know, he speaks out, he's an activist.
We have so much Radiohead news, not because we're also just, like, big Radiohead fans, but there's a lot of Radiohead news that came out of this that's, like, actually sort of consequential to, like, a larger thing. And there's a lot that Sean wanted to talk about, and I wanted to talk about, so we added together. But, so Tom York, there's been this sort of controversy about bands boycotting performing in Israel.
This is the BDS movement and everything.
Yeah.
We won't get super political.
The divestment movement of different companies into anything that has to do with investing into Israel as a country. Not that's just a statement. That's how everything works. So a lot of artists were upset at Radiohead because Radiohead is not kind of holding the line, if you will, and they are performing.
They
in Israel.
Did. They when the BDS movement started in what was that 2005, 2006, I believe. They haven't played since then, and it so now they are playing a show in Tel Aviv in June this year, I believe.
Yeah.
And Tom was saying a bunch of, they've been very quiet on it. A lot of socially active, whatever you want to call it, bands and musicians have been kind of throwing it against Radiohead, and now Tom
Andy Green from the Rolling Stone, gave an interview and like kind of criticizing that, and then
also Waters from Pink Floyd. There we go.
What Tom York said specifically was, just to quote him, "I'll be totally honest with you, this has been extremely upsetting. There's an awful lot of people who don't agree with the BDS movement, including us. I don't agree with the cultural ban at all, along with J.K. Rowling, Noam Chomsky, and a list of others."
So you can kind of get a sense of where he is. I mean, and he was also saying that Johnny, like, they're kind of, it's kind of offending Tom in a way, because he's saying they're acting as if they don't know what's going on, even though they are kind of in the middle of the BDS movement, because Johnny is married to an Arab Jew. He has Palestinian friends and Jewish friends, and it's not like he doesn't know what's going on at all. So it's really hard for them to go up, but he's like, you know what, let's go play there just for the music. You know, we haven't played there in 12 years, so let's go and show off our stuff, you know?
It's a divisive, passionate issue that a lot of people, like, get very defensive about for, like, their own reasons.
Yeah, for sure. Both sides.
Like, obviously. I think Nigel Goodrich...
Godrich.
I'm so sorry. I think Nigel Godrich put it best when he said that he doesn't believe that cultural boycotts are positive ever. But more specifically, I think it's true to say that you'd be denying people the music are the people... The people you'd be denying the music are the people who would agree with you and don't necessarily agree with their government. And I kind of think about that here. You have a lot of people who don't approve of Donald Trump, even though he represents, like, the country
free world.
World stage.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even say free world anymore, because it looks like the free world's like, fuck America, but no politics. But that's... I wouldn't want a musician to boycott playing in America because of Donald Trump.
Exactly.
Especially when I'm like, not all of us are supporting this. Not all of us are for this.
The same thing with Israel. Not everyone...
I think when you're talking... When you're talking outside of something as universal as entertainment, that you don't have to have, like, a political opinion to be around or by, sports can even be another good example.
Sports is very good, because it's unifying. It should be unifying of... Because you have fans, you know, like, you go into football, soccer. Yeah. You have just diverse cultures and everything going and unifying for their one team, you know?
Yeah.
And that's something that music and entertainment should do as well. Or they all kind of go in the same category, but...
Yeah, my idea is that, like... Even if you want to make... And, yeah, entertainment is very political, and, like, it should be, right? Or to an extent. It should... Entertainment shouldn't be blind to, like, the times and the issues that are going on, right?
Right,
but
for sure.
For those of you who... I'll put it like this. There are two ways to look at it. The way I said earlier, where you can go into a place and you may not... The people there may not agree with their government, or they may disagree with the government, or they might agree with it, but they all just want to go and see that concert.
Right.
And you get all different types of people at these concerts, because concerts, even though I just said music is inherently political and, like, should be to an extent, concerts and, like, the experience of enjoying music shouldn't be. You don't go to most concerts because of the political views of the artists, or, like, the political views, period. Like, demographics have their, like, preferences, right? You go to a Run the Jewels concert, you're gonna have a lot of liberals. Like, but, like... It can be a unifying thing. And then my second point is that if you say that, oh, bands should just, like, protest playing places, you could use music as that, like, cultural coming together to
For
bring
sure.
people
yeah.
into a conversation, to get people on your political side, whatever that may be. So you could use that piece of the conversation to unite people based on, like, some common ground, and then work in the middle. Because a lot of our politics now is just kind of, like, yelling back and forth at each other.
It's all becoming white noise, so... And
nothing's ever like, I'll meet you where you are, you meet me where I am, let's have, like, a passionate but, like, honest debate about these things. And, like, that could facilitate that. I'm not saying Radiohead's gonna, like, interrupt one of their songs and start talking about the Israeli-Palestine conflict and all the history behind that. But I am saying that, like...
Well, they'll just stop at No Surprises, because they bring down the government and the entire audience applauds, so...
Which is a very Radiohead thing to do, so I wouldn't rule it out. But I'm also saying that you shouldn't view a band's, or, like, any one particular action as they're with you or they're against you.
Right.
I think we do a lot of that in culture today, but that's pretty much all I really want to say about it.
And then keeping on with the Radiohead.
Sorry, one last political thing.
Oh,
I just
want
to mention what Tom York said about Netanyahu and Trump. and
Theresa May, quoting,
all of this creates divisive energy. You're not bringing people together. You're not encouraging dialogue or a sense of understanding, kind of like what we just said, but in better words. Now, if you're talking about trying to make things, make any progress in society, if you create division, what do you get? You get fucking Theresa May. You get Netanyahu. You get fucking Trump. That's divisive. So there goes Tom York being Tom York and trashing politicians as he always does.
So, and then on the last little dot of Radiohead, so probably one of my favorite musicians ever, Johnny Greenwood, will be opening for Radiohead. Yeah. You know, he has many, many different side projects. He's done film scores and this and that. So for a PTA, Paul Thomas Anderson project called Junoon with a bunch of Indian artists, they will be performing from starting in June till I think believe through August or so.
Yeah.
And opening up through before Radiohead. And I think that is kind of really awesome in a way. Just to be that musically talented.
He's opening for himself.
He's opening for his own band. Which,
like, for the record.
And it's not being all pretentious asshole about it. It's just, hey, my guys who we did Junoon with want to play. So, and that's really awesome.
Yeah.
I hope to keep seeing that more and more. So,
I mean, he's definitely not the first one to do it. But, I mean, that's just like a little cool anecdote.
Yeah, it's a little cool thing. I wish he did that at Berklee, because I'd love to see that. I love Johnny's soundtracks and whatnot. They're just grand. I mean, There Will Be Blood is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, and he's also doing, I believe, two film scores this year. So one for Paul Thomas Anderson's film, which came coming out later this year, and then another film. I can't think of the director's
name. I mean, they're
busy. So, yeah, Johnny is just, God, I don't know how you be in that brain for 24/7, like Chopin. How the hell do you just write music every single day and not go mental? So.
And then my favorite news out of all of this is kind of like, and this is the last Radiohead thing, there's a possibility, Tom York says, like they're open to it, recording the next Radiohead album live as a band.
Which would be really awesome.
There's only one thing that's better, like in the world of Radiohead, that's just better than Radiohead itself, and that's Radiohead live.
Yeah, especially, and
I like most Radiohead songs better live.
Yeah, and we saw them back in April, and it's just, it's ridiculous, because the little things that they change in the songs make them uniquely different than the album versions and sound just a little bit better, at least in my opinion.
The idea that Kanye West had of like having music constantly evolve,
it's the same
is
thing.
What Radiohead has actually kind of done, because you can even look at one song performed 10 years ago live
to
and one
today.
Song performed live today, and they are slightly different.
Or it could even be almost totally different as well.
Yeah.
Because one will be like, look at everything.
I might be wrong.
Or even better, be everything in its right place.
Yeah.
Because Everything is Right Place would be when he started it in 2001. It was the full band, normal piano, everything go into it. And then there's a few acoustic versions of the mid-2000s with just Tom on a piano. And then they did it with Johnny doing the weird radio transmission thing, whatever. Then Tom getting a synth piano,
right.
Then the whole band coming. And they all shake the lemon shaker thing, whatever. And then it just keeps adding on. So that's a perfect representation of it. And
yeah, like
it's amazing.
Yeah, they upgrade all the time. So that would be cool to see.
So they have a Core i9 in them.
I'm getting sick of myself talking about Radiohead.
Yeah,
so let's move on.
Let's move on.
Lord has new tracks, and like I can't believe how much like I like Lord. Honestly, Lord has some haters, but like
it surprised me because when I first heard his stuff, what was that 13?
First song, of course, was...
But she's really good now.
I mean, like, she was always really good. I mean, Royals was, like... Royals was... When I remember hearing it, I was like, this sounds sort of like a different song I've heard before, but also it has its own spin. She's a really talented vocalist.
That's the best way to put it, yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very talented. In general.
Magnets. Who doesn't love Magnets? The Disclosure song with Lord.
So good.
Powerful, like, so talented. And so... she's going to be releasing a new album, I'm sure. But there are three singles out, Liability, Green Light, and Perfect Places. All very emotional songs, all very Lord. Also, instrumentally and production-wise, very good songs.
It's clean and precise, yeah.
No, yeah, it's just like, I think Lorde is about to hit it out of the park once again with whatever she's got coming up, and I'm glad, because phenomenal artist, really talented, really, I think, into the music industry for the right reasons.
Yeah, for the art, you know, yeah. Which is kind of rare in these days. She's not, she is a celebrity, but she's not, you know, we'll get to it in a second, you know, a celebrity who happens to make music. She's a musician who's became a celebrity, but is still a musician down in the, you know, at her heart, which is good.
That's authenticity. Authenticity, keeps me loving Lorde, like, as much. She's already a phenomenal artist, but, and, like, on that alone, that stands the best, but
correct.
The authenticity makes me kind of, like, enjoy Lorde more. There's a couple of albums we wanted to mention and acknowledge that they happened, but, like, we won't be able to talk about them really till next week. We'll give them, like, full in-depth, like, kind of reviews, or, like, the kind of fast hot take reviews we do.
Right.
But Roger Waters of Pink Floyd has a new album out, and so does Phoenix. Can you talk about the Phoenix one really fast?
Well, the Phoenix has a new song released, which is similar, really, really similar to J-Boy, but then their album comes out next Friday, I believe, or whenever the 8th is.
Yeah, of course, that gives us time to...
Then we'll fully
again,
listen to
it.
Again,
that's Thursday.
Jeez, man, what's up with Thursdays? And then, yeah, Roger Waters releases an album yesterday, so yeah. We haven't had time to bloody well listen to it.
Great job.
So
yeah, we're going to...
We'll go in depth.
There's so much music this week that we already had on the rundown. We want to mention that it exists. Hopefully Roger Waters doesn't die, because that seems to be the Sean curse.
Yeah, and then Foo Fighters released a new song as well, and it's really
hard
rock now, you know? We're going back to more, instead of where a lot of artists are going more, like, for example, Foster the People, they released their stuff in April, more electronic stuff. Foo Fighters kept true to their stuff, really hard rocky with this song.
Yeah, and it still sounds
modern. It's called Run.
Yeah, the single's called Run.
It's just a single for now, and... it's good. I like it. I was kind of surprised. I listened to the first half of the song. I was really coming into it thinking, okay, let's see what they do. If they go see if they would change, go the masses of the people want to go to. But they kept true to it. The beginning of the song, I thought, oh, here it's going to come. It's going to change. And then it just went hard rock. I go, oh, here we go. He's trying
to keep it. Yeah, it's an actual hard rock song, which is like,
nice. It's
lovely.
Good. Good for a change. I like it. Good for not change, ironically. And then, with Foster the People as well. They did. But that was back in April, I believe. So,
You were comparing Foster the People as an example.
Exactly. Which is what Foster they did. People. They changed their sound and made it more electronic, which I don't mind to a point, but I just feel like that's kind of like the industry standard now.
That's what everyone does. So,
yeah,
like,
everyone
keeps
doing it.
You're kind of just like, okay, well.
It's like the same thing. I'm trying not to be all hipstery
about it. At what point is that allowable, though? Like, what's an example? Because, like, if you're going to make music and you want to do well,
you have to change it in your own style. The problem with the few songs that Foster People did is they changed it to where it's the stupid snare electronic drum, which you hear in trap music, you hear in a lot of alternative music, you hear in R&B now.
It's too safe.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's nothing completely new. It's, hey, these are other artists are cool, let me have my own take on it, which is awesome, but that's been going on the past 3 years now, where it seems to be a lot of artists keep doing that. Which I don't mind. I do like it to a point, but I hope that it starts to, you know, fade out a bit more, and now something else would kind of take the pull a bit more, you know, a bit more authentic. Because as much as I do love electronic, I think there is a limit, and it's starting right now to reach it, to where everything's starting to sound the same.
And blend in,
which is not good, because I had no idea that was Foster the People at first when I listened to it until actually this week. And I go, wait, what? That was them.
So they're coming out with a new album soon. But you know what I think might be happening? I think maybe it's just the economist in me and likes to think of everything in cycles. But
maybe.
I think this happened in the 70s and the 80s too.
Well, this,
late
70s
disco was very electronic. And the 80s was like very electronic to the point where everything was the Peter Griffin like.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The 80s, that happened too. But then you had New Order. You had one of my favorite bands, which is New Order. Sounds super 80s, but then you know, kind of make their own sound out of it.
Yeah.
So,
and then the 90s, we went straight like grunge rock.
And then,
like,
everybody sounded really grungy.
Rock pop.
And then you have Radiohead come out of it, make their own sound. So
yeah.
I think that's right. We're in the middle of maybe somebody coming with a breakthrough of this to make their own spin on it, you know?
Yeah.
That's what's happened throughout the decades. Is you had 70s, you know, you had disco stuff, and then but you still had standout artists, when, like Zeppelin and other things come out of it. And then the 80s, New Order, 90s, you have a lot in the 90s. Then the early 2000s and whatnot, you have what, like the...
Everything goes in cycles. Or at least, maybe. That's my one little anecdote. Maybe it hasn't done that ever before. Like, can you think of me... Maybe like from the 30s to the 70s, did music do that again? Did we see a resurgence of like brass instruments?
Freaking love that. I love big bands, you know, Glenn Miller Orchestra and whatnot from the 40s. I love that stuff.
What if we all just go back to listening to like just big bands?
But
just with like modern instruments.
Because then we can dance to that and everything. It would be so nice. I would love that.
I mean, what is EDC?
Yeah.
Everyone dances to that.
Yeah. I mean,
if you call that like a dance,
it's more not, just like it's not.
Jumping and MDMA.
And many a drug.
And with that, we have finally made it through the news. Good God.
Yeah, I told you it was a big week, man.
What a week. I said it before and I've said it again. The world is horrible, but the music is fantastic.
At least the music is good.
Yeah.
All right.
So, now I'm going to talk about white artists that start to take on black culture and then immediately leave it and then reject it. And say like, oh, that was a phase I went through that was really bad. And that's, I don't want to make this a conversation about like cultural appropriation versus not, because people can have opinions about that. I'm probably going to turn a lot of people off.
Yeah.
Like
down a slippery slope.
I want to keep this to the musical aspect of it and what it has to do with music as much as possible. And like culture and like pop culture. So this started for me with Miley Cyrus's Billboard interview earlier on in May. Where, you know, she's talked about her change and everything. She's talked about how she's, like, stopped doing drugs and all these different things. Like, she's basically changed her act. When before, she was, like, twerking at the MTV Awards.
And yeah, and being, dyeing her eyebrows yellow or doing some, I don't even know.
And before
know
that, she was a Disney star.
Yeah, before that.
Disney country music.
You know, what do you call that? Just a Southern Belle thing, whatever,
For people who wonder why I'm jaded about, like, Disney and the music, like, and, like, culture in general, and why I'm super cynical, it's shit like that.
Just but, complete 180, skirt, like, skirt, go around.
I haven't even come of age in the time that's taken Miley Cyrus to, like, figure out how she wants to take advantage of the media for money.
Seriously.
But anyways, so in the Billboard interview, a lot of her talks about, like, appropriating black culture and cultural appropriation come up. And she says, "It's mind-boggling to me that there's even a controversy around me having black dancers. That became a thing where people said I was taking advantage of black culture, and with Mike, Will made it. What the fuck? That wasn't true. Those were dancers I liked." I can't imagine something more white girl than saying, "I'm not racist. I like the black dancers.
It's like, they're my friends."
I get what she's trying to say. Yeah. That, like, oh, I like them regardless of their race. But, like, God, you really did not word that right.
No. And it's something that's been going on with a lot of, you know, top 40 artists where you have a...
They have their innocent phase.
They have their innocent phase.
They have their rebel
phase.
Their
rebel phase.
And then they have their come to Jesus phase.
Yeah.
But
and
the rebel phase is always characterized by hanging around black people. And I think that's,
seriously,
like, sending, and it's like, it's sending a subliminal message that I don't think these people are even aware of. So here's the part of the Billboard interview that, like, really got a lot of people angry and, like, myself kind of, like, motivated to do this whole thing. She tells the Billboard interviewer, quote, "I'd also love that Kendrick Lamar song, Humble, something, something natural, like ass with some stretch marks. I love it because it's not, come sit on my dick, suck on my cock. I can't listen to that anymore. That's what pushed me out of the hip-hop scene a little. It was too much Lamborghini, got my Rolex, get a girl on my cock. I'm so not that."
She has a little bit of a
pictures,
point.
Pictures.
Yeah.
If podcasts had pictures, I would show you and Miley Cyrus in, like, every single kind
yeah.
of, like, situation. It, like, reads as vaguely slut-shamey to me to have this, like, whole kind of talk about, oh, I'm not that. And then by denouncing as the hip-hop scene, that's a dog whistle. That's
yeah.
that's when the same thing when people say, oh, I like he's sort of like urban, or he's from the inner cities. Those are the dog yeah. whistles that just
it's
mean
just,
black
it's
culture.
A total, it's a hypocritical thing to say completely. And it's so stupid. To me, it's just a big push of a celebrity wanting to be more famous, basically, you know? They start to lose grasp of their own thing. They don't, you know, they see their ratings go down or whatever they see.
I honestly think, my best, you know, I always try to be, like, as sympathetic as possible. My best thing is that, like, she's just yet another kid who could not handle the fame.
It could be, because of the Disney thing, it's just a complete 180. And now I think she kind of sees that in a way, but not in the right ways, you know? That makes any sense?
Yeah.
How do English words could? So, and then you have other stars like Katy Perry doing the same bloody thing, a few weeks ago or so?
Yeah. And, like, there's just all these, like, videos of Katy Perry, like, dabbing and, like, doing all this, like, dumb shit, like, hopping around, like, being the one, like, white girl clearly out of it, like, hopping around all the black artists. The same thing that the other, like, white girl who shaves her head and, like, doesn't... The other white girl who's, like, bad at music shaves her head and just has terrible history of culturally appropriating. Of course, I'm talking about Justin Bieber. He's just always doing... How do words good? He's just always so annoying on this stuff. He's always, like, trying to hang around all...
Super hypocritical.
He uses black people as, like, tools. He uses them as, like, instruments. It's, like, how to make him look like he has some credibility or coolness.
Right, exactly.
And it's all just, like, a business thing. But I really want to question the mind of some of the people who, like, voluntarily are in all of his videos. Lawrence Fishburne said it really well, like, on the 24th, that Justin Bieber acts blackish, but he doesn't get shot by the police. And that's kind of the whole point about this. Like, you can say what you want about the culture, but if you're going to celebrate it and then trash it, and you're not even a part of it, then you're doing a disservice to what people of color, and black people in particular, have done to advance their perception in society. Because, like, the Bill Cosby show, for everything, the only reason people still like Bill Cosby today, even though he is basically a rapist, allegedly, but also totally, is because what the Cosby show did for the black community was, for the first time in American society, portray black people as potentially normal.
Normal, family, and funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the first time that black people weren't, like, portrayed as, like,
drug dealers,
or, like, blaxploitation. It was just like, no, this is a normal family with, like, normal things, and occasionally they're black, and it's kind of vanilla, and, like, that's kind of the point. But it's always this back and forth between how white people are perceived in the how black people are perceived in the media by white people, and how black people try to carry themselves. I'm like, no, it's perfect.
Yeah.
I don't want Lil Yachty to be the representative of the black community.
Oh, God, please don't.
And, like, I don't put that on everyone, but, like, there's a certain image that black people are trying to uphold, like, fought to uphold for a long time. And when people like Miley Cyrus, there's an old saying in the black community, I don't know where it came from, but, like, America is a culture that loves black, like, style and culture, but hates black people.
But that's spot on, really, to it.
And
it's perfect.
It just plays into that narrative a lot. And so that's when it really bugs me, in addition to just being, like, kind of awkward and obnoxious, and I don't really like Miley Cyrus, Katy Perry, or Justin Bieber as artists particularly. It's also just
it's
the way they misappropriate culture.
And the big thing, too, to me, it's celebrity artists who are more of a celebrity than an artist, trying to keep their status, keep their popularity and everything. And it seems more of a publicity stunt, whatever you want to call it, more than having, you know, the music speak for it.
Yeah.
And it's detracting from it, making the industry even more shit, because then more artists feel like they have to do something out of the ordinary or not to keep up, but they don't at all. And it's kind of starting to backfire on the people who are acting out.
Yeah, you know? Because, like, we do live in a more, like, social justice kind of society.
Yeah,
like,
though I don't like PC culture much at all, I think it's a bit overwhelming and whatnot, to say the least.
I mean, like, it's
but
good intentions, bad executions.
Damn.
A lot of the points
exactly.
they're talking about, like, systemic racism and systemic sexism and all these different things, they're like, we can prove these things, they do happen to some extent, but
the second you make a joke or anything,
a lot of people are very aggressive with how they do it, which I think is always a fine line. On the other hand, you might say, oh, why are we just being aggressive? We're just angry because this has been going on for too long and we continue to be invalidated. I see that and I often feel that as well. But there's a middle ground that needs to kind of be reached. Not directly in the middle, but it's a reflection of that culture. But my main point is bring it back to music and bring it back to culture. I just want to quickly mention the Boondocks because that is a great show of...
Yeah.
That was an offensive show. That show was going to be on Fox. It couldn't be because they used the N-word too much and the host and the creators decided not to curtail their use of the N-word because they wanted to keep it real. They talk about homosexuality in a pretty, like, homophobic kind of manner if you look at it in that lens. But the show is very self-aware of that if you really, like, watch it. They talk about racism in a very vulgar manner, but it's, like, very self-aware of it when you're watching it. So, like, you can talk and you can perform in media and you can, like, touch on these topics, but it's all about the way you promote it. It's all approach it. It's all about the way you present it, and these artists really don't do that.
No, not at all. So... That's shame, and
that's I've said my bit.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's it.
Wow, those are three things I'm really angry about in music. That's like
pretty much
like cultural appropriation, the chain smokers entirely, and we're going to find Sean. Find what are you angry about in music?
Sounds the damn same. Okay. Stop making it all the same. Be different. God,
we'll talk about that next week then.
Yes.
What is is music? Because that's something that. You talk about a lot. It's like, is music getting really samey? So that will be the conversation next week.
Yeah, but I can go on a tangent on that.
Yeah, and I would love to, because I just kind of went on a tangent. Thank you for letting me doing that.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's do recommendations.
Yes, finally, music recommendations,
so I will
and
go
your
first.
Turn this time.
All right, my top three favorite bands, favorite musical artists of all time, is a band from Iceland called Sigur Rós. It's ambient. Completely different. They.
If you told me, I'm gonna let you do the rest of it. If you told me to say, what does Sigur Rós sound like? I would give you the like confused hands up in the air, I don't know emoji because I.
It's post rock, so it's very floaty, ambient music. It's really light for the most of their albums. They started in the '90s and are. 99% of their music isn't in English. It's either in Icelandic or Hoplandic, put quotations on that, because there's an entire album that doesn't have words. It's just Jonsi, the lead singer and who writes the vocals, he would mark down sounds to make the music and then usually put in lyrics, but he just marked down the sounds for an entire album. And then just said, you know what? It sounds great like this. Let me put it here. And it made one of the best albums ever. It's just Untitled. Made in 2002. My favorite song, probably my favorite song of all time, are up there. It's Untitled 8. Or they have little subtitles now, which is called Poplegid, which means the pop song. And it's a 15-minute long track, but the...
We should also mention that Sigur Rós tracks are...
Very, very long. It's ambient post-rock, and post-rock tends to be 7 minutes plus. Sigur Rós go from anywhere from 4 to 15 minutes long, you know? And they have a few very, very good albums. Their latest album, which came out in 2013, Kvikkjør, is more dark, heavy synth stuff, but not the typical snare drum synth crap. It's more... They still have their own unique input into it, but it's a darker sound. And then they've been releasing songs here or there. They released one last year, June of 2016, which we listened to on the way home from one of my races. Very, very dark still. Jonsi still goes in his falsetto very high. And they released two new songs this year, which I saw live.
You saw Sigur Rós live right before
which
is
LA.
A great month for you.
Oh my god, that was fantastic. But the main thing with Sigur Rós is Jonsi bows a guitar and sings mainly in a very falsetto voice, and it's extremely unique. And if you like ambient, spacey music, or if you need music to help you fall asleep, actually, or to study...
In a good way.
In a very good way. To study or to focus on, it's something that I think a lot more people would really enjoy. I really want people to listen to it. I mean... Untitled, that album is just fantastic.
Would that be your song recommendation then?
My album, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, so the two albums I would recommend would be the Untitled album, which literally has no title, and then the one with Happy Pontia, what is that? Talk, T-A-K-K, which they released in 2005, I believe, which literally means thank you, or thanks. Talk from top to bottom is just fantastic. I mean, if you want to know what they sound like, that's Sigur Rós.
Yeah.
And they have some of the best songs on that album. I mean, all of them, all of their albums are great, honestly, except their first album, Vaughn, which is really weird. It's not Sigur Rós at all. They had like, they were almost like, it was weird, in the early 90s, they were like a grunge pop band or something, which is so strange to say. And then they made, in 1999, a Gettysperion, if well, I can pronounce that right.
Grunge, which, like, yeah. Pop can only exist in, like, the Nordic countries.
Yeah, they're weird. But, and then they made, which translates to English, A Good Beginning in 1999, which sets their sound. You know, that post-rock, ambient, floaty music, and it's just beautiful. They'll have orchestras behind them for some of their tracks, which actually, that's what I saw in April, was with the LA Philharmonic, and I mean,
yeah, they performed with the LA Philharmonic. Like, yeah. That's an amazing thing.
It was one of the best musical experiences I've ever witnessed. It's just so different. And they have actually the, Pitchfork did it on YouTube and still has it up. The Sigur Rós of the LA Philharmonic, I believe, if you want to go check that out. But yeah, that's my recommendation. I cannot recommend them enough. They're one of my favorite artists of all time, and I think more and more people should listen to them. So I think it's a good gateway to that style of music, the perfect kind of way into post-rock style of music.
Into your, like, so, elevated, yeah, chill style of, like, and music
now,
consumption.
Yeah, now you go to something, and not completely, something different.
Completely different.
Which I my like music, Tiger, though.
Yeah, my music recommendation, keeping up with what we did in episode one for someone off of Mousetrap Records and changing it up by going to electronic music. Just like Sean's, like, Radiohead talk about all the time guy, I'm going to be EDC talk about all the time guy probably for the month of June. So, sorry. But also,
you only have 2 weeks, so you're chill.
Oh, I'm going to be talking about it afterwards.
Yeah, never mind. Damn it. I'm sorry, humans.
If I'm alive. So yeah, I want to talk about Rez. So Rez is
amazing. R-E-Z-Z.
Yeah, R-E-Z-Z, because I can never choose an artist with a normal sounding. I'm going to recommend Mike Snow. Oh, so it's two eyes in the mic and just
like,
trust me.
It's like Sigur Rós, S-I-G-U-R-R-O-S. It's like,
yes.
Yeah, why can't we have normal names?
Why do no? Anyways, so Rez is a female DJ, which is way too rare, and that kind of is annoying and kind of talks about, like, music as a whole.
Yeah.
We tend to love male artists, especially DJs, but no, a female DJ who honestly goes harder than most male DJs I know.
And the I want to say something before you go on your rant with her. The best thing about her, she has her own unique look, and I love that, with the crazy, weird, floaty light up glasses thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, I love it when somebody does something like unique and like you can tell it's her immediately.
So
I love that.
My girlfriend and one of our mutual friends went to see Rez a couple nights ago. I was just like busy or like in a mood, so I didn't want to go. I kind of secretly regret it.
I'm surprised you didn't go. Yeah.
Yeah, because I got into her right after that concert, and so I was like, okay, what the hell is this? And I'm like, oh, this is really great. And she's playing at EDC, I'm pretty sure. So
yes, I
that's going
so.
To be awesome. But yeah, the if I could describe the sound, if you just made dead mouse with really intense bassy drops that are like almost as intense as like the most deep of Future House, but I wouldn't call it Future House because it's not really house.
It's
but
like
it's just
Scream mixed with dead mouse mixed with Skrillex.
Yeah,
is the best way. Like original Scream, who made dead mouse in the mid 2000s.
I would say
plus
it's Skrillex, but not high pitched.
That's like that's the best one. Not. And not overly done, you know, not overly hyped, I guess.
Not
it's
over,
still heavy, but
yeah. That's a great way I would describe it. It's like heavy, bassy, really intense, but I love it. She's like a phenomenal artist. I hear that she's also got like a great crowd, like, or like stage presence.
Stage presence, yeah. And she's a good, just unique artist and who loves her stuff, you know, most of her work. Gets nervous, you know, admits it, gets extremely nervous when she goes before her on stage and everything. I love that.
I was reading some articles about her, and like, people are calling her the female Gesaffelstein, and that is pretty
interesting.
And, okay. You know, that's a pretty good relation to it. She's remixed Gesaffelstein songs before too. I think someone at Vice referred to, or like mentioned that, and she was just like all giggly and happy because like that's a huge inspiration to her.
Yeah, no, it's big.
And so yeah, no, it's just everything I love about an artist, like down to earth and really cares about the art, and also everything I love about the artist in the sense that good. Mm-hmm. Very good.
And another one on Mousetrap Records. That thing, oh man, it just produces some great stuff.
Looking on Spotify right now, Cryptic is her, like, I guess most popular song. My favorite's Fourth Impact, just because I like the instrumentation of it. I like the way it kind of like flows and happens. Mine like the way the music happens.
Mine is I or One or whatever that one. You can't tell.
You know, you never know with some of these fonts. Sometimes it's like an I and sometimes it's a one. But
whatever that one is, I like that one, which I was surprised because normally I don't like super heavy songs, but for some reason I like that one.
Yeah. You're very like, I'm pretty sure it's I.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's I.
Yeah, if I searched one, yeah, it's not one, it's I.
Yeah, yeah, so, all right, so it'd be
But yeah, yeah, you're very much like, skeptical-ish to electronic music. Not all of it, but no, very but much of like the new stuff.
A lot of it, because
anything you would call EDM.
Yeah, because I'm a purist at heart when it comes to it, so.
With house music, especially.
Yeah, especially
but
with that.
No, even Rez is great. Not even Rez, but like, Rez is great even for Sean.
Yes, yeah.
But, no, yeah. She hasn't got a lot of stuff on Spotify. Still,
she's
like,
very
up
new.
And coming, but like, again, it's one of those artists where if music is going this way, then I'm very happy.
Yeah, so that's so you want to check her out, so that way you can
She's playing Friday in DC. Oh, thank God.
And
I'm gonna start my weekend with Rez. That's gonna be phenomenal.
That's good. So you can even give an in-depth review on her, unless you do too many drugs and forget. But
allegedly,
Percocets.
Molly, Percocets. We're done with that. That was last week's joke. We're done. Anyways, we've run very long. Thank you for listening to this podcast.
Yes,
if you liked it, rate it 5 stars and subscribe to us on all the platforms.
We tell other people about it, please.
Tell other people. That's honestly the best way that this podcast
word of mouth
gets out to other people. Any podcast, really. Also, speaking of podcasts that we like and word of mouth and getting out to other people, We Made It, also on Syndicate 23, also available on all platforms now. It's made its proper launch.
Yeah.
My friend Caesar and Bam Talking Soccer, their We Made It Awards. What kind of show does an award show into their second episode? We Made It. That's the kind of players they are. So listen to that. Check that out. It's also a really great podcast. Also, I would say better than this. Still.
Yes, by far.
And yeah, we will be back with you tomorrow. Not tomorrow. Well, we'll be back at you. Well, we're recording this on Saturday, so we're here on Sunday.
Yeah, and we'll be here next week. This week, say that. So.
We'll be here next week. Good God. That was a slug for you. All right.
All right, cheers,
guys. Thank you
for
listening. Goodbye.
Cheers.